भगवते वासुदेवाय
Thank you for being with us this evening. Entrance into a holy place is only really possible when, by the Lord's mercy, our hearts are opened with faith and devotion. Then we can access and genuinely appreciate the unlimited good fortune that we have. Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. The Brahma Samhita tells us that when our eyes are decorated with prema, with spiritual love, then we can actually see Krishna personally. Bhaktyatvananyayashakya aham evam vidurajuna. Bhagavad Gita tells, it is only by bhakti, by unmotivated, uninterrupted loving service, that I can be seen as I am, standing before you. Jejatha mam prapadyante thams tadaiva bhajamya. As we surrender, as we approach Krishna, Krishna reveals himself accordingly. And Vrindavan is the manifested expansion of Krishna's own pastimes and pleasure potency. Vrindavan is none different from Krishna. According to the sincerity of our devotion, we will actually be able to appreciate it. We read in the lives of the great acharyas how they were living in Vrindavan. He Radhe Brajadeva Ke Chalalite He Nanda Shuno Kutha. The six Goswamis, day and night, they were seeking Krishna. Seeking Krishna through pleasing Krishna, through the service of Krishna. As Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur taught us and Srila Prabhupada cited often, do not try to see Krishna. Try to serve Krishna with such sincere devotion that Krishna is pleased to see us. Vrindavan being Krishna's own expanded self in the form of his abode, is to be understood and approached in the same way. It is through our devotion, through our intense eagerness to serve Krishna, to please Krishna, that we can actually experience the blessing of being in Vrindavan. There are 9 processes of devotional service, of which the foundational platform in which our love of God is built and awakened is Sravanam Kirtanam, hearing and chanting. Simply by hearing these transcendental subject matters with an eager and faithful heart, Srinvatam Sukata Krishna Punda Sravana Kirtana, Krishna is pleased. It's an act of love. At the beginning, it may be tapasya, an austerity, sitting in a lecture, especially when I'm speaking. And when I go over time, it may be an austerity, but this transcendental sound vibration, which has been passed down from the scriptures through the acharyas, it is transcendental. And when we are eager, enthusiastic to hear, eager and enthusiastic to repeat what we hear, then Krishna within our heart becomes very, very pleased. And when Krishna is pleased, Krishna removes all the obstacles of the modes of passion and ignorance and reveals himself. Shru shru shro shudatanasya vasudeva kataruchi syan mahatsevaya vipra pundya tirtana sevanat. The Srimad Bhagavatam tells us that we can acquire this eager taste to hear and chant the glories of the Lord when we are eager and sincere to serve great souls. Through satsang, through blessings of great souls, which naturally springs from their hearts when we desire to please them through our service, then the gates to the higher realms of true bhakti are opened from within and without. So let us attentively surrender our consciousness, surrender our very life force, which is manifested through our consciousness, by absorbing ourselves in hearing Krishna's incredible pastimes and teachings. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yoviti tattvata. Tyapvadeham punara janma naitimam eti sorajana. One who understands the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance and activities when he comes into this world never has to take birth again but attains the supreme abode. Krishna is pavitra. He is supremely pure. And simply by hearing about him, we become purified. Om apavitra pavitro va sarva vastam gato viva yasmarit pundarikaksham sapaya pyantara suchi. Whether we are pure or impure, that's something that is a result of the past. there's not much we can do about what has already happened. But there's everything we can do about where we want to go in the present and the future. Simply by remembering Krishna, who's all pure within our hearts, we become purified. And it's so simple. In Vrindavan, we read about the Brijavasis in Srimad Bhagavatam. They were constantly in intimate meditation on Krishna, by speaking about him, by singing about him, by remembering him in every situation, and by chanting his holy names. When Krishna performs his leelas in this world, he delivers the whole world, the asuras, the suras, and everyone else. But through Vyasadeva and the acharyas in Parampara, they have preserved the sound vibration of the description of his teachings and his pastimes, so that everyone or anyone from anywhere can achieve the same experience as the residents of Vrindavan simply through hearing, chanting, and remembering in this attitude of seva or service. Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. It is the greatest benediction. Because through this hearing and chanting of the names and the glories of the Lord, through developing the enthusiasm to please and serve the Lord, we could be liberated from all the limitations of material existence, which are especially predominated by birth, old age, disease, and death. Adiatmaka, adidaivaka, adibodhaka. Whoever we are, whatever we have, wherever we're from, the same threefold miseries will come upon us. Miseries of the body and mind, anxiety, sickness, pain. Miseries caused by natural disturbances, heat, cold, earthquakes, winds, miseries caused by other living beings, humans, family members, insects, monkeys. But through bhakti, through the simple process of hearing and chanting, which has descended from the spiritual world, param drisvani vartate, it's not that necessarily the material situations change, but we change. An ordinary flower in muddy water is very muddy. A lotus flower in the same water is pure and fragrant, and untainted by any of the filth. So similarly, even in this world of threefold miseries, even in bodies that are going through all kinds of various transformations, through the grace of Krishna, we can connect with our eternal soul. And that is just a beginning. We can connect with the eternal love of the soul, param drisva nivartate, and experience the happiness of Krishna's unlimited beauty, Krishna's unlimited wealth, Krishna's unlimited fame and strength, Krishna's unlimited love, for us and all living beings. And that's where we take our pleasure from. There is no power anywhere that could disturb that pleasure, because it is transcendental, it is eternal. When Krishna appears in this world, we can't expect him to live by our conceptions of what is possible. We heard from His Holiness Giriraj Swami Maharaj that when Srila Prabhupada gave devotees a very, very inconceivably difficult service, they looked at Srila Prabhupada with utter dismay. And as a matter of fact, they said, "Srila Prabhupada, that is impossible." That sounds quite convincing. Srila Prabhupada was even more convincing when he said, "Impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary." Because in Krishna, there's nothing impossible. Because Krishna has achintya shakti, inconceivable potencies. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna teaches us that we're not this body, that we're eternal souls. And he teaches the nature of the relationship between the body and the soul, the Atma. The body, the soul, and God. Time. How we're temporarily influenced by karma. How we can disentangle ourselves from karma. And how we can ultimately achieve the highest goal of ecstatic loving service by surrendering to Krishna. Man manabhava mad bhakto madhya shimna namaskuru. And we can surrender Krishna by always thinking of him, becoming his devotee, worshipping him, offer homage to him. In this way, Krishna promises us without fail we will come to him. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna showed Arjuna the Virat Rupa, the incredible, dazzling, universal form. However much progress in technology, no movie makers with the optimal progress in special effects could ever come close to even a trace of what Arjuna saw, the universal form. And we read in Srimad Bhagavatam about how Krishna, as Kapila Dev describes the creation of the material existence and how it works. It's absolutely inconceivable. We already know that. Our greatest scientists cannot fathom the secrets of a single atomic molecular particle. The deeper they go, the more they discover things that are just indescribable. What to speak of the universe itself, its length, its breadth, the various planets, the various life forms and different varieties of different planets. It's unbelievable. And this entire universe, which is just a speck among unlimited universes in the cosmic manifestation, is just a creation that Krishna manifests through an exhalation. God is great. You are exhaling so many times. Every few seconds you're exhaling. And you think you're great. And you think you can become God. what has been created through your exhalations. Maybe a few germs. But Krishna exhales, the cosmic manifestation is created, he inhales, and it's all destroyed. The cause of all causes, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. Lord Brahma, who is the secondary creator of our entire universe, who lives 311 trillion years, the father of everyone, his wisdom is revealed that Krishna's body is not a product of illusion. It's not just a temporary manifestation of an impersonal energy. Krishna's beautiful body playing on his flute is Satchit Ananda Vigraha. It is eternal. It is full of all knowledge and it is full of all bliss. Anadira Dira Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. He's the original source of everything that exists and the cause of all causes. And it is that Parabrahman, that supreme Brahman, that appears in this world where we're sitting today in Vrindavan as a little child with all of his full potencies. But all of those potencies are subordinate to his supreme potency, which is prema, or love. Krishna controls his devotees by his love, and in reciprocation, Krishna is controlled by his devotees through our love. So when Krishna performs his leelas in this world, devotees do not think this is some mythological, symbolic, figurative understanding that will help us to expand our consciousness. I remember in 1971 when I first came to Vrindavan, I was 20 years old and I was hearing these incredible stories. And it was just so obvious to me. How could I not believe it? If God is here in this world, what is it that he can't do? We already heard how Yashoda Mai, one time, she was little baby Krishna. She was feeding Krishna the milk from her breast. And as she was feeding him, Krishna happened to yawn. His mouth was only about this size. And as he yawned, she just looked in his mouth to see little teeth growing in and whatever else. And she saw the entire universal creation within little Gopal's mouth. How is that possible? Now, you can open your mouth, and I can open my mouth. Sometimes it's better if we don't open our mouths. But what do we see inside? But little baby Krishna, Yashoda saw this whole universe within his mouth, and it wasn't something figurative. If Krishna can manifest the whole universal creation outside of his mouth, then he has the power to manifest it within his mouth, and his mouth is no more than a few inches wide. Why not? What's the use of being God if you can't do all these things? But Krishna does it in Vrindavan in such a special way.
that Yashoda Mai is seeing the entire universe in Krishna's tiny little mouth. But Krishna doesn't want her to have her motherly affection disturbed. So she is thinking that this must be some sort of disease that Krishna has. And she gets worried about Krishna. What kind of digestion? What is this? And then he smiles and she forgets everything. From Gokul Mahavan, after the Yamala Arjuna trees were delivered in Krishna's Damodar Leela, Upananda and the other gopas, they had a meeting together that Mahavan is not a safe place. Putana, Shakatashura, Trinavarta, now these big trees are falling. I think we should go to a safer place. We should go to Vrindavan. The forest where there is the river Yamuna and there's the Govardhan Hill and the beautiful forest. Let us go there. So they put everything on their ox carts and they traveled to Chatikar and began to travel like that. In the Bandiravan area, Krishna delivered Vatsasura. In the Kadiravan area, he delivered Bakasura. During that time, Krishna was put in charge of the calves. I believe in the last 3 days, you all went to the place of Lord Brahma's bewilderment. This is a very special story for so many reasons, unlimited reasons. But one special reason is by Krishna and Sri Radharani's grace, it was this story that was Srila Prabhupada's concluding chapter of his translations and commentaries of Srimad Bhagavatam. He translated and dictated the purports during his last days in this world with us. So it has a very special place in our hearts. It begins in a holy place in Vrindavan called Sapoli. Krishna woke up one morning and decided he wanted to leave early with all of his friends and have a picnic on the bank of the Yamuna River in the forests of Vrindavan. So Yashoda Mai bathed him and decorated him with fine garments and with some jewels, and put his little peacock feather in his hair. And Krishna was just so beautiful. And he took a horn made of a buffalo's horn, I believe, and he blew that horn to call all of his friends. And soon, hundreds and thousands of little cowherd boys gathered. And each one had large, large quantities of calves. Now here's where we really meditate on the reality of Krishna's Achintya Shakti. Vrindavan is said to be about 32 square miles. And Krishna had hundreds and thousands of little cowherd boys. And how many calves? The Srimad Bhagavatam says asankhya. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur tells, asankhya means unlimited. What does unlimited mean? We have no, we can talk about and think about unlimited, but we have no real conception of what it means for anything to be unlimited because our brains are so limited. It is only through faith and through mercy that we can understand the unlimited. When the unlimited wants to reveal the unlimited, then we can understand the unlimited. And if the unlimited cannot reveal the unlimited to the limited, then he's not unlimited. For those who are translating this, I'm sorry. So we cannot fathom what is unlimited. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, on the basis of the Holy Scripture, he gives us a glimpse into what asankhya means. The number one with 17 zeros after it. Now, my worst subject when I was in school was mathematics. I was pretty good at spelling, but I wasn't good at mathematics. Until I came in contact with the Gaudiya math. But I have to be honest, I was even worse in science. So I tried to calculate. One with 17 or 18 zeros is 100 quadrillion. Can anyone fathom 100 quadrillion? That's how many calves were dancing around this 32 square miles of Vrindavan with hundreds and thousands of gopas, and there were no traffic jams. There was just space. Krishna, if he wants, he could put the entire universe within the 32 square miles of Vrindavan. Because Krishna has inconceivable potencies. So we don't doubt, is this true? How can it be true? When we hear, the more incredible, the more wonderful, the more impossible, the more devotees become happy, raise their arms with tears of affection and chant the holy names. Each of the boys had their little, Prabhupada calls it a tiffin, their little lunch boxes tied up. Their mothers prepared it for them. And they had their little sticks for herding the calves. And they each had a flute and a buffalo horn. And they, all their mothers decorated them very nicely before they came to the pastures. But the little boys were jumping and playing. They were all with Krishna. It was early in the morning. And just for the pleasure of Krishna, and Krishna doing it just for the pleasure of the boys, they weren't so much happy. Well, not happy. They weren't so much attracted by the way their parents decorated them. They started decorating themselves. With leaves and with flowers and with peacock feathers and with minerals. And they were having such wonderful experience just serving each other, decorating each other. Krishna played on his flute. That flute would mesmerize everyone. Krishna was just a small boy. The elder gopis, they were thinking that because Yashoda Mai, because her love nourishes Krishna's lips with her milk, therefore empowered by Yashodamai's prema, when Krishna plays his flute, it is so sweet. It melts our hearts. And as Krishna played his flute, another cowherd boy would play his horn. And one boy said, that horn sounds very harsh. I will sing just like a kokila, a sweet cuckoo bird. And another cowherd boy, and all of a sudden, all these cowherd boys started singing like cuckoo birds. And then another boy said, cowherd boys are known for their speed, not for their singing. Singing is something that swamis do. Just watch me as I run and follow the shadow of this bird that's flying in the sky. And then hundreds of little cowherd boys started putting their arms out like wings and running exactly under the shadow of the birds. And then some of the boys, they heard the bees humming. And they all started humming like the bees. Can you imagine hundreds and thousands of cowherd boys buzzing like bees? Definitely not unlimited. And they'd see swans in the water so gracefully moving their necks and their bodies, and the gopas along with Krishna were moving their necks and moving their just like the swans. They saw some little ducks sitting quietly, and the cowherd boys would sit next to the ducks, imitating the ducks. Saw peacocks dancing. The boys would sing just like the peacocks and dance just like the peacocks. Would you like to try? Louder, please, louder. Quite authentic. Thank you very much. And other boys, they'd see monkeys with their little baby monkeys, with their mother monkeys. They would be sitting on trees and they wanted to climb the trees, so the boys would grab the tails of the monkeys in order to climb up to the trees. Then they'd sit next to the monkey. And the monkey would make a face toward them, a monkey face. And the boys would exactly replicate the expression of the monkey and look right back at the monkey, and the monkey would become afraid and jump off the tree. And then the boy, exactly with the same gesture as the monkey, would jump off the tree and follow the monkey. And sometimes they'd see little frogs, and they'd sit next to the frog, and the frog would hop, and the little boy would hop. And the frog would hop, and the gopa would hop, and the frog would jump in the lake of water, and the little gopa would jump in a lake of water, and others would go to the lake of water and they'd see their reflections and they'd start chastising the reflection. Why are you imitating me? Who are you? Why are you doing here? And sometimes they'd go to a well. They'd actually start laughing at their reflection. Then they'd go to a well and they'd scream down the well. And they'd hear the echo. They'd go, "Are!" And they'd hear, "Are!" And they'd start calling bad names to whoever that echo was. The gopas would just play. Krishna would go to a distant place to look at the beautiful scenery of Vrindavan, and the gopas would say, I will run and touch Krishna first. And another would say, no, 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 I will run and touch Krishna first. I will touch Krishna first. And thousands of gopas were running all to touch Krishna first. And by Krishna's grace, each one is thinking that I touched Krishna first. Krishna can reciprocate and fulfill all the desires of his devotees. They would play so many games with the amalaki fruits. In this way they spent their time laughing, playing. There's a beautiful verse that Shukadeva Goswami speaks, that the jnanis, they approach the absolute truth as Brahman, the all-pervading, impersonal existence. The yogis as the Paramatma, the Lord who is situated within the heart of every living being. The devotees as the supreme personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes, the worshipable Lord. But these little cowherd boys, due to amassing krita punya, infinite pious deeds, that same supreme Brahman they're playing with as an ordinary little child, wrestling with him, dancing for him. Krishna, to please his cowherd boyfriends, he would do anything. You want, the boys would say, dance like a peacock, and Krishna would dance like a peacock, and everybody would start dancing like peacocks with him, and they'd be laughing and laughing and laughing and dancing and singing. This krita punya, this is not material pious activities. True piety is unselfish, unmotivated service that pleases the Lord. They had amassed infinite quantities of such loving service to the Lord to enable them to play with the Supreme Absolute Truth as their dear, most intimate, loving friend. Rupa Goswami tells that somehow or other, just think of Krishna. He will steal our hearts away from all of the causes of suffering and miseries in this world. Rupa Goswami writes, if you are attached to the things of this world, your property, your families, your wealth, anything else that charms your heart, do not go to Keshi Ghat and the bank of the Yamuna. Because if you go there, you will see Govinda playing on his beautiful flute, standing in with his threefold bending form. And when Krishna awakens that vision of himself in your heart, then you become indescribably, endlessly attracted only to that. Krishna tells in Gita, whatever is beautiful in this world is only a particle of a spark of my splendor. When we connect with the source, it is not that we become hard-hearted. We become very soft-hearted. Vaishnava philosophy teaches us that when we actually connect with Krishna, we see janmadyashayataha, that everything is emanating from Krishna. Om purnam ada purnam idam, all material and spiritual things are the energy of Krishna. Therefore we see Krishna's presence in everything that exists. We see everything as meant for the pleasure of Krishna. We see every living being as a part of Krishna. Therefore, there is universal, infinite love for Krishna, which manifests as compassion and love for every living being, and respect and honor for everything that exists.
This is Krishna consciousness.
So as these gopas were playing and dancing and doing so many games, whatever games have ever been played in the entire world, the origin of all games is Goloka Vrindavan. Not the Brahma Jyoti. Not even Vaikuntha. Goloka. Where all games are expressions of the pure love of the soul between God and Prem. The Prem shared between Krishna, the devotees, and the devotees with each other. At that time, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Prabhupada explain that Krishna and his friends would get so absorbed in playing together. They would be so conquered by the love that they would share with one another, there is no way that they could ever stop playing. But at the same time, prasad was there. So by Krishna's own yoga maya, lila shakti potency, every day, just before lunchtime, some asura would come to Vrindavan to break up their play and really build up their appetite so they could even enjoy the prasad more. And this time, the lila shakti, the pastime potency of the Lord, affected the Paramatma, the super soul, in the heart of Agasura. Kamsa, he was really frustrated. He sent so many asuras to Vrindavan to kill Krishna and the Vrijavasis, but they all died. Kamsa called Aga. He said, your older sister, Putana, was killed by Krishna. It's a baby. And your older brother, Bakasura, was killed by Krishna. You are the most powerful, the most ferocious, undefeatable. You are the one who can avenge the death of your family members by killing Krishna. I order you to go to Vrindavan. On this particular day, Aga appeared. And he was watching how much fun Krishna was having with all the gopas. He couldn't tolerate it. This is the nature of envy. A devotee is paradukaduki. That means another person's suffering is my suffering. Another person's happiness is my happiness. That's the nature of the soul. That's love. But when there's envy, everything becomes perverted. I enjoy seeing other people struggle and suffer and fail because it makes me feel better about myself. And other people's happiness is a threat. Why not me? I deserve. Agasura was so envious. He could not tolerate seeing the happiness of these children. His mind was burning with anguish. And he was determined to kill them all to prove his supremacy. He was a mystic. By the cities that he had acquired, Mahima City, he manifested the body of a gigantic serpent, specifically a python, and his body extended 8 miles long.
and he opened his mouth. He had a huge mouth. The bottom lip was on the ground and the top was in the clouds. You may say that's impossible, but that's your problem. People could do incredible things if they want. Just because you can't do it and nobody you knows can do it, it doesn't mean nobody can do it. In Kali Yuga, we're all dwarfed by limitations. He was thinking in his mind, this is the mentality of an envious person. That here is Krishna. He killed my brother and sister. In honor of my brother and sister, to offer them the pinda of sesame seeds and water, I am going to kill Krishna. Not only am I going to kill Krishna, but I'm going to kill all the calves and all the cowherd boys. And if I kill them, all the parents, the brothers, the sisters, the cows, they will all die because they cannot live without Krishna and their children. In this way, through one swallowing act, I am going to completely annihilate the entire population of Vrindavan. That was his demoniac mentality. He opened his mouth and waited. Now this day was Balaram's appearance day. Because it was his birthday, he sent a message to Krishna that I'm not allowed to go and play with all of you today because I have to give charity to the Brahmins and I have to let my parents do all kinds of yajnas and different types of rituals for my birthday. So Balaram was not there. Meanwhile, the gopas see Agasura and they were thrilled, thinking, what an incredible scenic piece of landscape that has been created here in Vrindavan for us to play with. Let's go play. And as they got closer, some of the little cowherd boys, they said, this looks like a gigantic living python. And they got scared and started running away. And the other boy said, no, no, don't be afraid. Come, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. Krishna will save us. And as they got closer, they were all sharing with each other what they were seeing. Is this some gigantic statue that looks like a python? Or is it really a python? Look, his mouth is so big, it's touching the clouds. And his teeth are like the peaks of mountains. And his tongue is like a wide highway. And that fishy smell that's coming out of his mouth, which is very warm, is because he eats all kinds of animals and living beings. And as they were looking, they were thinking, if this is a python, and if he swallows us, then Krishna will save us. Bakasura! He was swallowed by Krishna, and look at how Krishna killed him. So let's go in. And they were clapping their hands, laughing, singing the glories of Krishna as they ran in the mouth of Agasura. And all the little calves, so innocent, with their tails raised, with tears of affection in their eyes, with smiles on their faces, they ran in after the cowherd boys into the mouth of Agasura as Krishna was standing watching. Krishna knew who this was. He was the most dangerous mystical asura. He came to kill them. Krishna decided, I will stop them. But before he could stop them,
They were all smiling. Every one of the calves and cowherd boys were looking at Krishna as they were clapping their hands and running deep into the belly of Akasura. Now, how is it possible? If Krishna's the controller of all controllers, why is it that he couldn't stop his friends from going in? Because Krishna's controlled by love. Krishna actually wanted to stop his friends from going in. But his friends, out of their love for Krishna, they wanted to go in just so that Krishna could do something wonderful to save them. And ultimately, Krishna had his desire to stop them, and they had their desire to go in and see Krishna's leelas. And Krishna was conquered by the love of his devotees. Meanwhile, Agasura kept his mouth open because he was waiting for the killer of his brother and sister. Krishna was thinking how to kill this demon without hurting my friends who are inside the body of Agasura. Then Krishna made his plan, and he entered into the mouth and the belly of Aga. The mouth closed. It was absolutely pitch dark inside of his stomach. And pythons have a special power where they have in their stomachs, they contract it so they could crush any animal that they eat. And he was just about to crush Krishna and all the calves and gopas. And the little cowherd boys, they fell unconscious as if dead, because there was no air and there was no light. And worse than that, in that pitch darkness, they couldn't see Krishna. So they were in so much separation, they just fell and lost all life. Krishna began to expand his body. And as he expanded, he filled up Agasura's body. And Agasura, as a mystic yogi, he expanded and Krishna expanded and he expanded and Krishna expanded. But when it comes to competition of yogic powers, Krishna is Yogeshwara. He is the supreme mystic from whom all yogic powers are coming from. So Agasura, because Krishna filled him so much, no air could go in or out. He was suffocating. And ultimately, he gave up his life. And that life force, it had nowhere to go. It burst through a hole from the top of his head and went into the sky in the form of a brilliant light and remained there. This is interesting because it's the only time in Vrindavan Leela that Krishna actually changed his form or exerted himself for any reason. When he lifted Govardhan Hill, he was that little seven-year-old boy just effortlessly holding it with the tip of the little finger of his left hand. When he killed the monstrous Rakshasi Putana, he remained a tiny little baby, just a few days old. And same with when Krishna showed the universe in his mouth, or even when Yashoda Mai took hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of meters of rope to tie up Krishna, his waist was still a little baby waist. Because he didn't want to interfere with the intimacy of his devotee's love for him as a friend and a child. But in Agasura, all the cowherd boys were unconscious, so they couldn't see. And because he was in Agha's mouth and it was closed, Yashoda and Nanda and nobody else could see. So there was no one witnessing him. So he grew and grew and grew and grew into a magnificent size. And ultimately, Agasura lost his life. His mouth opened. Krishna glanced upon the gopas and the calves and brought them back to life. And they saw Krishna. And Krishna asked all of them to go outside, and they all clapped their hands and danced and went outside of Agasura. And at the very end, Krishna came out. Then something amazing happened. Right in front of everyone, the jiva, the atma, the soul of Agha, which was waiting in the sky, merged into the body of Krishna. And the Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami tells, it's very rare for a demon to get liberation. Sayujya Mukti. But Krishna gave many of those asuras that he killed liberation into his eternal, all-pervading effulgence, the Brahman. For Putana, his sister, he gave the liberation of being his own motherly nurse in Goloka Vrindavan. Because Putana gave that motherly service to Krishna, her whole family was specially dear to Krishna, even Agasura. And right in front of everybody's eyes, Agasura achieved Sarupya Mukti, which means taking the liberated position of one of Krishna's personal associates in the spiritual world of Vaikuntha to enjoy Krishna's or Narayan's pastimes forever. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains how this happened. Because Agasura gave so much pleasure to the cowherd boys. They just had a wonderful, fun time running and dancing into his mouth. And they were so much looking forward to anything that this Asura would do so that Krishna would save them. Because they were in his mouth, he was associating with these gopas who were having such happy experience with him. And because of that association, he was actually transformed. And at the last moment, he was actually relishing their association. And therefore, he was given eternal loving service in this spiritual world by Krishna's grace. The Agasura, according to Thakur Bhaktivinod, represents the mentality that causes us to be harsh, mean, or cruel to others due to envy. This is a great obstacle on the path of bhakti. And as Agasura was considered one of the greatest of all the demons, this is one of the greatest impediments within our own hearts. Envy, which just causes us to disrespect and mistreat others. Instead of serving that propensity, we should recognize it for what it is. Sometimes we speak about the good dog and the bad dog, the divine and the demonic nature within all of us. Well, this Agasura is within all of us, invoking us to cause harm to others due to our envy. But somehow or other, if we take shelter of the Lord, we have no power against Agasura. But by the grace of Krishna, he can liberate us, as he liberated the cowherd boys from Agasura. And Krishna is none different than his name. We simply have to learn to take shelter of chanting these holy names.
Jayjata mam prapajante.
Krishna says, as you approach me, I reward you accordingly. Krishna entered into Agasura's mouth. Or let us say, Krishna entered into Agasura's body. And in reciprocation, Krishna allowed Agasura to enter his body. And in doing so, went back home, back to Godhead. Shukadeva Goswami told Parikshit Maharaj that this happened during Krishna's Komara Leela. Komara Leela is from Krishna's birth until he's 5 years old. And the Poganda Leela is from 6 till 10 years old. Shukadeva Goswami said that after Agasura was killed, his body dried up, and the skin of his body became a favorite playground for the cowherd boys. But it wasn't until 1 year later that the cowherd boys told the people in the village of Vrindavan about the liberation of Agasura. But they told it as if it happened on that same day. Shukadeva Goswami Parikshit Maharaj was very fascinated by this. How is it possible? This incredible leela, they didn't talk about it for one full year. And when they did, they spoke about it as if it happened that day. Shukadeva Goswami begins the next chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam by praising Parikshit Maharaj, that you are Bhagavat Uttama. You are the best of devotees. You are the best of the devotees because you're so eager to hear more and more and more. And the nature of Krishna's pastimes, they are ever new. Even if you hear the same pastime 100 million times, or even asankhya times, 100 quadrillion times, the same leela. If you're actually tasting devotion, every time you hear it, it will be sweeter and fresher and newer. Because Krishna's navayovanam cha. He's ever fresh, he's ever new. And similarly, his names are ever fresh and ever new. This is the test of how we're actually awakening our devotion. We're chanting this Maha Mantra. How many names have we chanted? Rupa Goswami tells us what his experience is. How much nectar the two syllables Krishna produce. When those two syllables dance on my tongue, I desire many, many, many tongues. And when that sound vibration of Krishna's name enters into my ears, I'm so thirsty. It's so nectarine. I desire millions and millions and millions of ears. And when it comes into the courtyard of my heart, it conquers my consciousness. These pastimes of Krishna are ever fresh and ever pure. If you don't know anything but one simple story of Krishna, you can repeat that story for the rest of eternity and never get bored. It will get sweeter and sweeter and sweeter every time if you're actually accessing Krishna's real mercy. Here is Parikshit Maharaj. He fasted till death. He had 7 days to live. He's sitting on the bank of the Ganges. He's not drinking water. He's not eating food. And yet, he's so much relishing the nectar of Krishna Katha. In another place, Parikshit Maharaj says, previously, when I was thirsty, I made an aparad to Samigrishi. But now, drinking the nectar of the river Ganges, of Harikatha, stories about Krishna flowing through my ears into my heart, it's unsatiable. He says, I'm feeling absolutely no desire for drinking anything or eating anything or going to sleep. And Shukadev Goswami, he explains, when those who are listening are eager to hear about Krishna, they empower the speaker to speak about Krishna. Because Krishna within the heart of the speaker sees how eager you are to hear, so Krishna empowers the speaker to speak with greater enthusiasm and empowerment. Sometimes in Harikatha, the listeners are more empowered than the speakers. It's a reciprocation of love. Shukadeva Goswami said, I will explain everything to you, Parikshit Maharaj, because you are so eager to hear. And there is no secrets that a spiritual master wants to hide from a truly submissive and eager disciple. He said, after Agasura was liberated, Krishna brought all of his cowherd boys to the bank of the Yamuna River. And they all sat down. Krishna said, this is such a beautiful, wonderful place to perform our leela of eating our lunch today. The sand is so clean and it is so soft. And here at this part of the Yamuna River, there's fragrant pollen on the banks from the many, many luxurious lotus flowers that are blossoming all around us. And can you hear all of these humming bees that are mad after the nectar of the lotuses and the Yamuna? And can you hear the parrots singing and the cuckoos cawing? Let us all enjoy our lunch here. All the little gopas sat in circles around Krishna. Shukadeva Goswami describes Krishna was like the whorl of a lotus flower, and all the cowherd boys were like the petals of the lotus flower in a circle around him. And there were so many. And each boy was looking at Krishna. And by Krishna's inconceivable power of bhaktivatsal to show affection to his devotees, even though they were in circles on all sides around Krishna, every gopa was thinking, not only thinking, he was experiencing that Krishna is only looking at me. This is Krishna. There's so many other gopas here. All of them are more qualified than me. But Krishna loves me so much, he's only looking at me. And all the thousands and thousands of cowherd boys are simultaneously, unblinkingly, like honeybees drinking from the lotus-like face the beauty of Krishna. Nothing could be higher than that exchange of loving glances on the banks of the Yamuna between the gopas and Krishna. And then one boy, he took out some of the preparations from his bag and he tasted it. And he said, Krishna, this is so good. Why don't you try it? And he'd take it right out of his mouth and give it to Krishna. And Krishna would try it. He'd say, this is very good. And he'd give it to another boy. And Krishna would take something from Yashoda's box and take a bite and start sharing it. And they were all sharing their different prasad and praising the flavors and the textures and the fragrances and joking and laughing. A bumblebee came by. And Krishna said to the bumblebee, that I know why you have come. You have come because you are attracted to Madhu Mangal, my Brahmin cowherd boyfriend. But beware, Madhu Mangal, because he has come to taste the nectar. But Bumblebee, be careful. It is a great sin if you kill a Brahmin. Now, you're not laughing. But when Krishna said this, there was uproarious, tumultuous laughter that was filling the 14 worlds by the cowherd boys. Anything Krishna says is absolutely pleasing to the heart because it's said with such affection. Some of the boys looked and they saw some monkeys and they started telling jokes. And they started talking to the monkeys. Oh, monkeys, if you want some good prasad, go attack that boy over there. He has very nice prasad. And they all laughing, and Krishna was laughing. And one boy took a samosa and broke it open and emptied out the sabji, vegetables from the samosas, and filled it with jasmine flower petals, packed it in. And then he closed up the samosa very expertly, and he gave that samosa to another gopa. And he said, just taste this, my mother made this, it's so nice, it's a samosa. And the gopa ate it. And jasmine flowers smell nice, but they're very bitter. So when he bit into it, he made a really one of those expressions after you eat something bitter. And all the other cowherd boys, including Krishna, were watching him. And they laughed and laughed and laughed. And the other Nagopa that ate it out of ecstatic anger, he playfully started beating up the Gopa that made that samosa. And everyone laughing and such intimacy of love. There's a story where one gopa said to Krishna that I have a very, very nice sweetmeat that my mother has given me. Close your eyes and open your mouth. And Krishna opened his mouth and he threw a flower in the mouth. And everyone was laughing, and Krishna was laughing. Meanwhile, after Krishna liberated Agasura, the demigods were so afraid of Agasura. They were performing pujas and mudras and doing all sorts of prayers that somehow this Aga would die. And when they saw Krishna, how incredibly he manifested not only killing Agasura, but giving him liberation into Vaikuntha, something even the demigods cannot attain, they were celebrating like anything. And Lord Brahma, he heard about this. And he saw the mystical liberation of Agasura. And he saw they were celebrating all over the universe. So Brahma came down just to see, what is this cowherd boy Krishna? He knew that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But inherently, every soul knows that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the covering of Maya bewilders us to forget. So Brahma and the devas, They were watching Krishna. According to the Vedic literatures, Krishna's name is Yajnabhuk, which means he's the enjoyer of sacrifices. The devas, the greatest of the Brahmins and the Rishis and the Yogis, they do yajna with the fragrant, pure ghee from Surabhi cows, and when it's offered with precise mantras and exact rituals with perfect motivations, Krishna accepts it. And here that same Krishna is just eating the food right out of the mouths of these little cowherd boys. This was incredible. To see God like this, unbelievable. Brahma was, I have to test this Krishna. Brahma became bewildered by this. Vrindavan Leela was just so sweet and so intimate and so spontaneous that God, the Almighty, is totally conquered in such a way that he's just playing like a totally ordinary little boy with little boys. As they were all eating prasad and laughing and joking together, the calves wandered off, searching for fresher grasses to eat. And when the little cowherd boys, they noticed that the calves were away, they became afraid because they loved their calves. They were responsible to protect their calves. But Krishna did not want them to be disturbed. He said, all of you stay right here and you enjoy your pastimes of eating prasad undisturbed, and I will personally, by myself, go to bring the calves back. Krishna left. He searched for the calves. He didn't see them. He looked in the pastures and the forests and the mountains and the mountain caves. He didn't see the calves anywhere. Then he came back to the place on the bank of the Yamuna, and all the gopas were gone. And Krishna, in his playful lila, was thinking, where have they all gone? I know where they have gone. Brahma has taken them. Lord Brahma had stolen all the calves and cowherd boys, put them into a state of mystical sleep, and hid them in a cave in a solitary place where no one could find them. Meanwhile, the sun was descending toward the horizon, and it was time for Krishna and all the gopas and calves to return home. And Krishna was thinking, what will happen to the mother cows and the mothers of the children if I return home without them? Krishna then, by his own sweet will, manifested personally the forms of all the unlimited calves and the large, large population of gopas. Incredibly, each cowherd boy was Krishna himself. And Krishna manifested himself with the exact physical features of each and every one of them. He was wearing the same clothes, the same jewelry. He had the same exact personalities and mannerisms, the same sound of his voice, the same little identical sticks and flutes and buffalo horns. And each calf was identical in every way.
Krishna is the source of everything that exists.
Whether philosophically we know Krishna, his achinta shakti, he could do anything.
But in Vrindavan, the way he does it is just so sweet, so attractive, that it melts our hearts and awakens our love.
And then Krishna, who was in the form of all the gopas, was playing with himself. And Krishna, in the form of all the calves, were calling all the calves. And all the calves who were Krishna were running up and reciprocating with Krishna's love. And then Krishna played his flute, and all the gopas who were Krishna himself started singing and dancing and playing their horns and flutes.
And they all came back into the village of Vrindavan. When the mothers of the gopas saw their children, it was an indescribable experience. They embraced their children. They wept tears of affection for their children. They bathed them. They clothed them. They put ornaments on them. They fed them. They smeared them with sandalwood oil and other fragrances. They put them to bed. They fed, after feeding them, nice prasad. But something mystical was there. Because all the mothers, they loved Krishna more than their own children.
They loved their children more than anybody could love children.
But still, they loved Krishna even more. And this is inconceivable. And each one of them, in their heart of hearts, they honored, they worshiped, and they rejoiced the good fortune of Yashoda and Nanda with no envy, with no competition. In their hearts, they cherished a desire to be able to love Krishna and express that love the same way as Nanda and Yashoda. And Krishna knew that desire in their heart.
And simultaneous with bewildering Brahma,
he gave every one of the elder mothers of Vrindavan the opportunity to personally love him as their mother and experience the exact same ecstasy as Yashoda.
And all the fathers, the exact same ecstasy as Nanda Maharaj.
And when the little calves came to their mothers, the mother cows also, they longed to love Krishna like Yashoda Mai.
And now Krishna became all their little calves. The mother cows, seeing their little calves coming home, they didn't know he was Krishna, but somehow or other the love was so incredibly, ever increasingly manifesting. They were licking and licking and licking the children calves as if they were going to swallow them, and milk was pouring from their udders as the little Krishnas were sucking their milk.
And then when Krishna would go out with all the calves and the cowherd boys the next day, they would just perform their leelas exactly. Every cowherd boy was reciprocating with Krishna, but the cowherd boys were Krishna, and Krishna was the cowherd boys and the calves. And they were performing the same leelas and games together. And then they'd come home, and this beautiful experience took place for 1 year.
Vrindavan is Chintamani Dham,
the place where all our desires to love and to serve Krishna are fulfilled. Each of the mother cows and the mother gopis got to share the experience of having Krishna as their own child for 1 year.
And according to the Garga Samhita, at that time, inconceivably by Krishna's arrangement, young gopis got married to the young gopas. And the young gopis wanted Krishna as their husband, and they all got Krishna as their husband for a year. Shri Krishna Bhagavan Ki Jai. This way Krishna manifested himself as everyone's. About 5 or 6 days before the year ended, Balaram and Krishna and all the gopas and calves, they were near Govardhan Hill. And cows were on the top of the hill with the elder cowherd men. When those cows saw their calves, they were so overwhelmed with motherly affection, they ran down the hill as if they had just two sets of legs. They were galloping down the hill. And it was a very, very rough terrain. The cowherd men were very concerned. What's going to happen to these cows? They could hurt themselves. And meanwhile, as their love for their little calves was increasing, their milk bags were increasing, 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 and milk was nectarine, love milk was pouring out of their udders. And when they finally reached their little calves, they were licking them, and the calves, so eager for the mother's loving milk, was sucking, sucking, sucking. All the calves were Krishna personally, himself. And most incredible thing that Balaram was seeing is that these cows had younger calves. The older calves didn't need to drink their milk. It was the young calves. But the cows didn't care about giving their milk to the little calves. They were so overwhelmed with affection for the older calves. And suddenly Balaram was thinking, for this whole year, I never really connected to this reality. That all the mothers of the gopas and all the mothers of the calves, I've never seen them love their children so much. They love their children exactly the way they love Krishna. How is this? Krishna's yogamaya potency, when he wants to increase the sweetness of his lila, even covers Balaram, who's not different than himself as his first expansion. And Balaram was wondering, how is this happening? How is it that I'm just noticing it now? And then he came to the realization, the conclusion, the only way this is possible is Krishna has personally become each calf and gopa, just to fulfill the innermost heart's desire of every cow and mother. And he asked Krishna, tell me why. Tell me how. Tell me who's responsible. And Krishna explained everything about Lord Brahma. Meanwhile, 5 or 6 days later, when exactly 1 year had passed, it was Balaram Jayanti again, so Balaram was not there. And Brahma decided to come and see what kind of confusion he created in Vrindavan. For Brahma, it's one moment. One moment for Brahma's time is 1 year by earthly time. When Brahma came down, he was shocked. He saw all the gopas and all the calves with Krishna. How is this possible? I put all these calves and gopas to sleep. He went back to the place and saw that they were still sleeping. Then he came back to Vrindavan and saw that they were all still with Krishna. And he went back and saw they were sleeping. He was saw Krishna. What's happening? Am I dreaming? Are the real gopas and calves in the cave, or are the real gopas and calves with Krishna, or vice versa? He couldn't figure out. You see, the more intelligent you are, the more bewildered you become when you can't understand things. Simple people, when they don't understand things, they just kind of flow with their own inabilities. But people who really are very intellectual and very philosophical and very, very adept at reasoning and logic, when they can't understand things, it becomes very traumatic. Well, for Brahma, this was really traumatic. Because he wanted to, with his powers as the creator of this universe, he wanted to see what he could do in Vrindavan. And what he saw is he did absolutely nothing. Impossible. And as he was becoming more and more and more confused, Krishna, out of his love for Brahma, wanted to confuse him even more. Right in front of Brahma's eight eyes, every one of those little calves and cowherd boys manifested the form of Narayan with four arms, holding the conch shell and the disc and the club and the lotus flower. Each one had a complexion like a rain cloud with beautiful golden ornaments, and each one had the Kostubha Mani and Srivats on chest. And when Krishna wants to show his mercy to his devotee, what Krishna can do? Brahma saw, now here there are unlimited Narayans standing before him. And around each and every one of those Narayans, he saw all living beings. He saw Brahmas and Shivas and Naradas and Devas and humans and animals. He saw all the different creative potencies and the modes of material nature in personified forms in circles, on incredible vast circles around each and every form of the Lord, chanting hymns. And at this point, Lord Brahma, he was practically unconscious. He was Vimohan, totally bewildered, absolutely conquered. He was speechless. He didn't know who he was or where he was or what he was. He was thinking himself so great and powerful that he could play tricks with Krishna, but now he realized that his potency was like the power of snow to produce light in the pitch black darkness of the night. Or like a little firefly. At Gita Nagari you have so many lightning bugs. And if you see at night, when I was at Gita Nagari during those most blessed and precious days in the service of Braja Leela Devi and Ekavir Prabhu, in helping to do some seva for Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj, sometimes I would go back at night and look at the lightning bugs. There's thousands and thousands, especially in moonless nights, and each one is going, and they just, it looks like they're lighting up the sky. Srimad Bhagavatam compares Brahma to this. In the pitch darkness, a firefly really thinks, I am illuminating the universe. But when the sun comes out, the lightning bug realizes,
I am totally insignificant.
Even though the lightning bug is putting as much wattage and voltage into that little light, nobody sees him, nobody cares, because the sun is present.
So we can only become proud when we're forgetful of Krishna. Krishna Surya Sam Maya Haya Andhakar. Krishna is like the light of the sun, and Maya is like darkness. The false ego, ahankar, is only possible when there is ignorance. And this is a testimony of what our actual position is in spiritual life. Sometimes we want to somehow or other boast or show our greatness before others. But for people who are a little Krishna conscious, the more you do that, the more they realize you are in the darkness of ignorance. Like a little firefly trying to show off your light. But when we actually understand the infinite sun of Krishna's light, Krishna's qualities, we take so much pleasure in Krishna's infinite qualities, we don't have to boast about ourselves. We don't have to prove anything to anyone else. We're just happy in any situation. If Krishna wants us to serve, like Shyamananda Pandit, by sweeping the pathways in a forest, he wants us washing the pots or cutting subjis, or if he wants us giving lectures to thousands of people or leading kirtans or managing zones, whatever we do, we're just the servant of the servant of the servant. We have nothing to prove to anyone. That's knowledge. Brahma realized he was totally insignificant. In this regard, Srila Prabhupada tells a story. Little later, when Krishna was in Dwarka, Brahma came to visit him. And the doorkeeper asked, "Who are you?" He said, "I am Brahma, the father of the universe. I've come to see Krishna." And the doorkeeper announced his arrival. And Krishna said, "Ask him which Brahma." That's quite humbling. And he said, "The four-headed Brahma." Krishna said, "Call him in." And Brahma asked, "Why did you ask which Brahma?" He said, "You want to know?" And then Krishna called other Brahmas. And thousands of Brahmas came. And every one of them were so much bigger and greater than this little Brahma. The Chaitanya Charitamrita says that our Brahma, in the presence of these other Brahmas, felt like a mosquito in a herd of gigantic elephants. And Krishna told Brahma, "Now you go and you do your seva." But understand, we're all just jivara swarupoi Krishnara nityatas. So Brahma was so perplexed, so bewildered as he was seeing all living beings gathered around infinite Vishnus. And suddenly, when he was paralyzed in bewilderment, Krishna took the veil of Yoga Maya away, and all the Vishnus, everyone disappeared, and all that was left was Krishna, standing just as he was exactly a year before with some yogurt and rice and little fruit in his hand, looking for the calves. Lord Brahma
looked around at the forest of Vrindavan, and he saw the, because he was completely purified of any ego, he now could see Vrindavan for what it really was. He saw each tree as a beautiful kalpa vriksha tree. He saw the nectaring flowing waves of the Yamuna, the river of the spiritual world. He saw ecstasies of love of God in total consciousness in every element of Vrindavan, every grain of dust as Chintamani, touchstone. He saw that because there was no envy between anyone, due to everyone's common love for Krishna, everyone loved each other. Even in this forest, the tigers and the deers were in love with each other. Where there's Krishna consciousness, there's love for each other on the true spiritual platform. That is the testimony of real Krishna consciousness. If we're competing and fighting with any envy in our heart, that means we're like those little lightning bugs, fireflies in the darkness of the ignorance of ego. But Brahma was illuminated. His ego was cleansed totally. And now he could actually see Vrindavan as it is. Previously he came down, he wasn't seeing Vrindavan as it is. He was seeing who he was and what he could do. But now, Vrindavan was revealed. The spiritual world. Chintamani Dham. The land of the most intimate, purest love. He was intoxicated. And he was seeing with full realization that the absolute truth, the source of all incarnations, the creator, maintainer, and destroyer of all that exists in his original, most munificent form is Krishna, a little cowherd boy who's still, now he's just entering from 5 to 6 years old. Lord Brahma, he came off of his swan carrier and offered his dandavats. Srila Prabhupada explains, dandavat means when you fall like a stick. Prabhupada says, it doesn't mean you just say dandavat. It means you actually do dandavat. And it doesn't mean just doing it with your body. Because, you know, those of us who've been around devotees for a while, we know some people, they do their dandavats because, you know, they have something to gain by doing it. But actual dandavats is with the body, the mind, the words, and the heart. To actually humble oneself to the presence of God within the heart of other living beings. Lord Brahma, he came down and fell down like a stick in the land of Vrindavan. Srimad Bhagavatam tells us that generally the devatas never touch the ground of the earth. But here the king of the king of the king of all devas was laying in the dust of Vrindavan and put all of his heads against Krishna's feet and was weeping tears. His tears were flowing like an abhishek upon Krishna's beautiful, beautiful lotus-like feet. And Brahma came up and offered beautiful prayers. Krishna did not say a word. Because Krishna, in the role of a little cowherd boy, really made Brahma seem insignificant. It was like, you know, who are you? I'm a cowherd boy. I'm looking for my calves. Why have you come to disturb me? And Brahma offered beautiful prayers. He glorified the beauty of Krishna's body, whose complexion like a wonderful monsoon rain cloud, lotus-like eyes, beautiful peacock feather, the gunjamala, the kostubamani, Srivats decorating his beautiful chest. The source of all beauty, the source of all sweetness, the source of everything attractive. And how the Lord incarnates again and again in this world out of his causeless mercy in so many ways, in so many forms, just to attract our hearts. And how Krishna manifested this beautiful Vrindavan Leela just to attract our hearts from the causes of the miseries of our material desires and attachments. And how merciful Krishna was to him, that just to cleanse him of his ego, just to cleanse him of his illusion, Krishna manifested this incredible, wonderful pastime. When Krishna tests or challenges the devotees, if that devotee can simply with folded palms offer obeisances with gratitude and humility, awaiting Krishna's mercy even through the most difficult trials and tribulations, that person is the rightful heir to the supreme liberation of prema bhakti. Brahma realized the supreme glory of Vrindavan. In his prayer, he was expressing to Krishna how some worship you as supreme Brahman, some worship you in Vaikuntha as the majestic Lord of all lords, some through the yogic process, they try to cleanse themselves of all desires and become peaceful. But here in Vrindavan, the gopas and the gopis and the cows and the calves, they intimately love you as a friend, as a child, as a lover, and how you intimately reciprocate with their love. Brahma's realization that this little form of Gopal is the supreme source of everything that exists and the highest revelation of the absolute truth, and the only way to achieve connection with Gopal is through bhakti, through love, through devotion. Brahma prayed to give up his high post, which is the cause of so much bewilderment. And he prayed that he could take his next birth in any form, in any place in Vrindavan. He especially prayed, let me be a little piece of stone, or let me take birth as an insignificant blade of grass, hoping that any of the maidservants or servants or any of the devotees of Vrindavan will place their feet on my head. Because if the dust of the feet of any of the residents of Vrindavan come upon my head, then I will be blessed that someday I could also experience the intimacy of the love that they have for you. Brahma didn't pray for Krishna's feet to be on his head. He didn't just pray for Radharani's feet to be on his head. He prayed for the calves, the cows, the gopas, the servants of the gopas, the peacocks, any of them, any one of them, let their feet be on my head so I can adopt the mood of the love of the residents of Vrindavan. In this prayer, Lord Brahma revealed the supremacy of Vrindavan Dham. Sanatana Goswami explains that Brahma had no power to steal Krishna's calves or gopas. Just like Ravana had no power to steal Sita. By Ram's arrangement, he created a Maya Sita, an expansion of the real Sita for Ravana to take. In the same way, when Brahma came to steal the calves and the little cowherd boys, as soon as he came, Krishna covered over with yoga maya the real calves and the real gopas and simultaneously manifested maya calves and gopas, and Brahma stole them. And the real calves and the real gopas, they remained exactly where they were, but they couldn't be seen by anyone due to the curtain of yoga maya. After Brahma surrendered to Krishna and prayed to be a blade of grass in Vrindavan, he begged Krishna's forgiveness. And Krishna didn't say anything to him. Krishna was just holding his little lump of yogurt and rice in his hand, looking around. But in doing so, Brahma understood that I'm not qualified yet to be a blade of grass in Vrindavan. Krishna wants me to go back to my abode of Brahmaloka to continue my duties, and in a future life I could be a blade of grass in Vrindavan. Brahma circumambulated Krishna 3 times, offered his obeisances, and left for his abode. After he was gone, Krishna lifted the curtain of yoga maya, and the original calves that were eating the grasses and the pastures, they manifested. And Krishna took all of them and went back to the bank of the Yamuna, and there were all of his cowherd boyfriends waiting for him. And when Krishna came back with all the calves, the cowherd boys were so happy, they were all laughing. They said, "Krishna, how possibly could you come back so soon? You went to find all the calves not even 1 moment ago. And you've come, and we couldn't eat anything in your absence, so we haven't even taken a morsel of food, so please come and eat with us." Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that a year passed. The children had grown somewhat substantially. The calves had grown too. But for them, that year passed as if it was a moment by the power of yoga maya. And meanwhile, for all the rest of the Brijavasis, a full year passed where Krishna was reciprocating with their love as their own child. And Krishna sat down with all the gopas, and they continued enjoying, laughing, joking, smiling, reciprocating love as they took their prasad. And they played for the rest of the day. Then they all came back into Vrindavan together, playing their flutes and their horns, and the cows welcomed the calves, and the elderly gopis and gopas welcomed the little gopas. And as they came into the village, all the cowherd boys were singing the glories of Krishna. How today Krishna liberated this giant serpent named Agasura. And the Brijabasis, oh, tell us all about this. Yes, yes, it just happened a few hours ago. He came and he was so big, his tongue was like a road, and we danced inside and Krishna liberated him. And then on the way home, his whole body was dried up and we were playing in his body. When Parikshit Maharaj heard this, he was struck with wonder. He asked Sukadev Goswami, how is it possible that anyone could love someone else's child more than their own? This is contradictory to human nature. Because in the material sense of love, when we identify ourselves with our body is very, very important. Because the body is what we identify with as who is loving and who is being loved. And without the body, there can really be no relationship of love. So the body is the most important thing for most people. But on the spiritual platform, we understand we're the eternal soul. And Krishna is the source of all souls. He is Sarvatma. Every soul is part and parcel of Krishna. So for the gopis and for the residents of Vrindavan, the reason we love anyone is because of our inherent love for Krishna. And in Krishna, the full potential, the full capacity of all our love can be expressed forever. And in that love for Krishna, we could have the most intimate, sweetest, deepest love for our family members and for every living being forever. Because we identify ourselves in our relation with Krishna. It is this state that is beyond birth, beyond death. In this state, even sorrow, even anxiety is ecstasy. Because it's an expression of our love for Krishna. And Shukadev Goswami, after speaking this beautiful story of Krishna and the gopas returning to Vrindavan, he gives a benediction that anyone who sincerely hears this pastime, all of their spiritual desires will be fulfilled. It was this story that Srila Prabhupada so intimately gave us in his very last days here in Sri Vrindavan Dham. Please do read that section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada's purports are so deep, so personal, and so incredible. In one place, he talks about bhakti, how it affects people. He says, in our Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan, when we first started construction, there was a very old, sickly, withered up little tamal tree. But after the devotees started hearing and chanting and rendering so much loving devotional service in the area of that tree, now that tree is flourishing with health and has grown to cover an entire section of our courtyard. The Bhakti Lata Bija the seed of devotion that is awakened within our heart by the mercy of Guru and the Vaishnavas, through the practicing of devotional service, predominantly hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord and being the servant of the servant of the Lord. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us, it becomes a flourishing tree. And on that tree ripens the sweetest of all fruits, this fruit of Krishna prema. And when that fruit is offered at the feet of Krishna, then the gardener, the devotee, when he tastes the sweetness of that fruit, he finds the highest happiness forever. And while in this world, the greatest motivation of that devotee is to please Krishna by distributing the sweetness of this fruits to everyone, everywhere. This is our prayer. This is our gratitude. This is our life. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Vrindavan Dham ki jai. Jai Jai Sri Radhe. You sound terribly sleepy. I don't blame you. But let's try to wake each other up by loudly chanting again. Jai Jai. Jai Jai Sri Radhe.